Welcome to another episode of Code for Thought, Bite-Sized RSE. Well, this is a recording of the piece Django's Blues with the Romani-French guitarist Django Reinhardt, published in 1947. And this takes us straight into the subject for today, the web development framework named after him, Django. My guests for the later part of this episode are two research software engineers who work with Django, Tom Couch and Max Albert. But before I hand over to Tom and Max, let's go back to Django's origins. It was Adrian Holovaty who named the web framework after Django Reinhardt because Adrian is a keen musician and guitarist. He is also an engineer, and in the early 2000s, he was working at the Lawrence Journal World newspaper in Kansas in the United States. 20 years ago, during what we now call the first Internet Revolution, many news outlets started to publish content online as well as in print. And the Lawrence Journal World was one of them. According to one of Adrian's colleagues, Simon Wilson, the website of the newspaper was written in PHP, monolithic, and took a lot of time to maintain. They do say that time is a luxury you do not have in a newsroom, though. And so Adrian, Simon, and two others, Jacob Kaplan Moss and Wilson Miller, decided to come up with something better. A more lightweight and modular framework for building web applications, and in a language that is more user-friendly too, Python. Their labors paid off, and in 2005 they published their work as the Django web framework we know today, and from then on the use of Django has grown quickly and a lot, and in 2008 an organization was set up to look after the framework, the Django Software Foundation. So, fast forward to today. Django is still widely used, despite the fact that there is really no shortage of other frameworks for web development. But Django managed to keep a loyal following, and there is a large and vibrant community of Django developers out there, as Tom and Max will tell us later. As I mentioned, Django is based on the Python language, and that itself is a big plus, because Python is easy to learn and comes with a huge toolset and support libraries. And then Python is also widely used in science and research, and a lot of software that gets built in research are web applications, which makes Django quite attractive to research software engineers and researchers who code. But what exactly is a web application? In today's world, websites are usually made of a lot more than just a collection of static web pages written in hypertext markup language, HTML. Often some kind of data storage facility is needed, like an SQL database. There may also be an application programming interface or API that handles requests being made from the user end of the website, the client. Sometimes there's not one, but many different servers involved, where different services are distributed over different sites. Most of this is hidden from the end user, though, sitting at a computer browsing the internet, which is why these components are often referred to as the backend. What the user sees are the web pages being served in the browser, the front end of the web application. In short, a web application is a set of components that work together to produce content presented to the user in a web browser. So where does Django come into all of this? Well, the framework brings different components together so you can create a new web application out of the box as quickly as possible. How this is done takes us to the core design of Django, the so-called Model Template View Design Pattern, or MTV for short. The Model Template View Design Pattern is based on a very general design pattern called the Model View Controller, or MVC. Incarnations of this design pattern can be found in different shapes and forms in a large number of frameworks all over the place. I, for instance, came across it when developing mobile apps. The MTV pattern of Django is one of the variants. The basic idea of the MTV pattern, or indeed the MVC pattern, is simple. It is to separate the handling and processing of data from the part that deals with user interfaces and data presentation. A third element is needed to connect the data processing with the data visualization part. And you can see this design in action when you create your first Django application. So let's do that. At this stage, I assume you have both Python and Django installed in your machine, and you created the Django project folder with a Python file called manage.py in it. When you've done all that, you create a new Django app with the command python manage.py start app followed by the name of the app. And this creates a folder with the name of the project. When you go into this folder, you will see a number of files, and I want to focus on two of them in particular, the file called models.py and fuse.py. Let's start with the models file. This is the model part of the MTV design made flesh. In other words, this is where your data handling goes. Django has built-in support for a number of popular SQL databases like Postgres, MySQL, SQLite, and Oracle. It is also using a technique called Object Relational Mapping, or ORM in short, which lets you use database tables like ordinary Python objects. But for that we need to define what they are, and you do this in the models Python file, where you list the database tables and their properties that your app needs to access. Now let's take a look at the fuse part of the MTV design pattern in Django. In this pattern, it is the view that brings together the data handling and the data presentation in a browser. And in Django, this is brought to life in the Python file called fuse. In the simplest case, the fuse Python file contains a list of Python functions for each web page or URL endpoint you want to create. Each of these functions returns an HTTP response object that effectively is the content shown on that page, which means that before you return the response, you can specify which data from your database you want to show and how you want to present them. In short, each function joins up the data source with the data visualization. And talking about fuse, there is one more thing we need when we create a new entry in the fuse Python file. And that is to specify where exactly the unique resource locator, the URL, is for the web application for this particular page. This list of endpoints goes into another Python file called urls.py. So we have now the model represented in the models Python file and the list of views we want to have that render the web pages together with a routing table. What then are the templates and where would you find them? To understand this, you need to realize that the fuse Python file only defines a web page and what goes into it, but it doesn't specify how it's being shown. And this is where the templates come in. Strictly speaking, you can run your Django app without any templates whatsoever, and for that, none are provided by default. You start creating templates by creating a folder called templates first. This folder must be in the directory where the models, views, and URLs Python files are. Templates are a mix of HTML syntax and the Django template language. The latter lets you insert data, for example, from your database, dynamically into the web page. And again, this is where the object relational mapping comes in handy because you can refer to database tables and their entries in a simple and standardized way, the same way as you would access objects in Python. Okay, so you created a template for a web page. What you need to do now is to make sure you use it. And this takes us back to the fuse Python file I mentioned earlier. For each web page, the fuse file has a Python function, as I mentioned before. And inside the function, you need to first load the template using the loader function, and then you use the render function for the template to display it. And so there you have it, the model template view in action. I appreciate there is a lot to take in, but it's not as scary as it sounds. There is a lot of documentation and help out there that gets you started in no time, as Tom explains in the following interview.
My name is Tom Couch. I'm a senior research software engineer in ARC, which is the Center for Advanced Research Computing at UCL. And I've been at UCL for 10 years now. But yeah, I joined the RSC team about 3 years ago. And I've been specializing in web development. And Django has featured a lot in that. It's been a big part of what I've been doing.
So how did you get into Django? Did it just happen because you went into a project, or was there a conscious decision to go into Django?
Well, Django chose me rather than the other way around. It was actually my first project on joining the group. There was an existing Django app, which a contractor had been brought in to develop. And this app was for a research group in the history department. They were trying to study ancient Roman texts and link them to one another and figure out who the authors were. And so this app provided a web tool where these researchers from all over the world could come together and edit texts and sort of link them together and add metadata and whatnot. So it was a pretty complicated Django app and a bit of a baptism of fire to sort of jump straight into it. But I quite quickly grew to love Django, really, because it was very friendly to a newcomer, both in terms of the documentation out there, the number of training resources, and just how easy it was to understand how these different bits link together and work.
Okay, you talked about baptism of fire, and yet it seemed to have been quite easy to actually get into Django.
Yeah. Well, I always think that if you're trying to learn something new, then having a few different training courses to sort of give you different perspectives really helps. And one of the ones I really found useful was one called Django for Everyone, which gives you a really kind of like from the ground up approach to web app development in general. You know, start with the basics of like, what is a request? What are the HTTP methods and things like that? So that was really helpful because it then kind of like when you come across Django's class-based views and whatnot, you can kind of see these methods being handled. But the other thing that I found useful was Danny Greenfeld's book, Two Scoops of Django, which my boss recommended to me. Then I discovered Cookie Cutter Django, which he created. And as soon as I saw what you got when you built a project with Cookie Cutter Django, suddenly this project I've been working on made like so much more sense because it was like, oh, the developers use Cookie Cutter Django. And yeah, it's funny how that happens. Like it's kind of serendipitous that I discovered that at the right time to help me understand this project.
So what were the difficult bits in learning Django? Were there any difficult bits?
Yeah, of course there are. You know, I've always struggled with forms. But people find, often recommend crispy forms as a way of working with forms in Django. I tend to undo the good work that the developers have done with forms, and I start unpacking them in the templates and just trying to access the labels and the fields directly there. Just because I want to sort of fiddle about with how things are put together a bit more.
As Tom mentioned, there's quite a lot of help available to get you started with Django. And the episode notes contain a number of links, including the Django project official websites with great tutorials, as well as the ones Tom mentions. Two Scoops of Django, the book, and Django for Everyone, the site. I also had a chance to talk to Max, another developer who's using Django for his research projects. I wanted to know from Max what applications he used Django for, and also discuss potential alternatives. But let's hand over to Max now.
So my name is Max Albert. I am currently a research software engineer in the research software group here in Southampton at the University of Southampton. I did my PhD here in Southampton as well in computational physics, and then I did a little bit of a stint as a data analyst and software engineer at a startup in the data science realm. Then I had my daughter and came back to academia. And it's a great place to be just in that intermediate space between research and software engineering. It's just fascinating.
And what role does Django play in your daily work or in previous projects?
I got introduced to it as part of my work here, actually. The second project that I worked on was one that I inherited, actually, from a colleague who had worked on it a few years prior. Is in collaboration with the National Crystallography Service, which is a nationwide facility that is also hosted here in Southampton. And they offer basically a service to researchers and also for-profit organizations, but I think it's mainly for academics to analyze crystal samples, which might sound a bit abstract, but it's actually super important because a lot of protein structures are crystals as well. And so you want to understand what they look like, to understand their properties and maybe make predictions. And so what they get sent in a bunch of crystal samples, and they need software to run their daily operations. And this project that I worked on was basically that. It helps them run their day-to-day work and to interact with clients. And so it's a reasonably standard full-stack application, and Django was chosen as the web framework to power it.
So why was it chosen? Why Django? Because there are other web frameworks.
I only joined after that choice had already been made. So I can't say for sure what in this case, the original reasons were, but if I had to choose, I would choose it again.
Okay.
So it depends a bit what your needs are. If you have a project where you have fairly limited needs, or you just need an API or something, then you might go with a micro framework like Flask or something. But Django is basically, it's batteries included. It's very, very well established, and it has basically something for every need. Like if you need authentication, if you need user management, if you need anything really, Django will have something to help you with it. And it has great documentation as well. I mean, it's battle proven. It was originally developed by a newspaper in the US. So a couple of journalists actually started writing it for their own needs in the newsroom. And since then, it's proven its worth. So the documentation is great. The community is huge. So you are in fairly well-supported waters, I would say.
So the crystal application, what kind of typical components does it have that Django helps you building?
As with any full stack app, if you think about it from the user's perspective first, I mean, obviously, if you open the browser, if you open the page, then as a standard user, you log in and you are able, if you've submitted a crystal sample via mail, then they will log it into the system, so you are able to see how it has been processed, how far it has been processed, or if anything has come up, you are able to like send messages back and forth. And when there's a new period of where they call for applications, because they obviously have limited resources, so they ask you to submit a proposal. So you have forms where you need to enter the details of that and so on. And so all of these are fairly standard things like web forms and just web pages that present information about that comes from your backend that Django has a lot of great support for. And then on the backend side of things is obviously the database where you store like the state that all your samples are in, or the user information and so on. And so the interaction with that is also really well established.
Are there any downsides with Django, or are there any things that you're not quite happy with?
That's an interesting question. So I would say it has, for me, been a fairly straightforward process to get into it. As I said, the documentation is really good. What I will say is that Django has a couple of different ways of doing things. So if you think about a typical view, for example, so if you think about how a request works, like the user goes to their browser, they hit your web page, and then your server needs to respond with something that is displayed in the browser. And how that request is processed and then sent back can be done internally in Django in a couple of different ways. The main two distinct methods are function-based views and class-based views. And the function-based views is basically you get your request, you write a regular function that from this request gets the information, populates the page, and sends it back, which is very straightforward to learn, but it can make extensibility and reusability of code difficult and can lead to something resembling spaghetti code over time. I have seen that a few times when I had to extend things, but the alternative with class-based views, I mean, they are a great way of reusing code and just having a lot of functionality out of the box, and you just need to tweak maybe a couple of methods on a class, but it's a more abstract way of approaching it, and it is a much steeper learning curve, and the whole flow of logic is a bit more implicit. It can make it more difficult to get up to speed with it and also to know what's going on. So it is a trade-off, but it's very powerful. So if you want to create a web form, you can basically just take one of the built-in class-based views and maybe just tweak one or two little things, and then it's adapted to your use case.
Are you referring to things like list view, for instance?
Yeah, for example. Yeah, or a form view and that sort of thing, yeah.
So I don't know if you worked with Flask.
Yeah, that's actually what I worked with originally.
Okay. So how does it compare in your view?
I would say you can totally build a whole full-fledged web application in Flask as well. But it feels to me that Flask is a bit more a bit closer to the metal, you build your application a lot more from scratch. So if you start with Django, you can just spin up a template for a web app and you have something up and running pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And you can have that with the whole shebang of authentication, user management, and so on. And with Flask, there are plugins that you can use, so that there is a lot of support for that, but it's more putting things together yourself. But at the same time, if you learn it, if you start learning web development, then Flask feels like it has less of a barrier to entry because you're basically closer to how things work under the hood, if that makes sense. So I feel you gain a better understanding of what's actually going on if you do a bit of development in Flask, maybe write your one of the 1,000 to-do app or blog application tutorials that are out there if you follow those. And I think you gain a good understanding. And I think it helped me to get up and running with Django more quickly. One of our group co-leads, John Robinson, when I asked, like, has anyone any like ideas that they would recommend to newcomers? And he said, learn Flask first. I don't think it's necessary. I mean, as I said, like, Django has great documentation, but like if you run through, even just through the whole beginner's tutorial, there's a lot to take in. So
yes, yeah.
Which makes sense because, I mean, full stack applications are non-trivial pieces of software and there's a lot of moving parts.
I appreciate the thought that Max had, that there is an advantage on looking behind the scenes and find out what's going on, or fiddling with it, as Tom said. But whether you use Flask or Django as your web development depends on your preferences and project requirements, of course. I'm running out of time, but I don't want to leave the discussion on Django without mentioning that it also works with other popular frameworks, such as the React JavaScript framework, and you will find a link for that, together with all the other material, in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening to this bite-sized RSE episode. The interactive sessions are organized by Jeremy Cohen from Imperial College in London and Steve Crouch from Southampton University. The podcast is produced by Peter Schmidt. And finally, we'd like to thank the Universe HPC program for supporting and sponsoring this program. And with that, goodbye, and see you at the next bite-sized RSE session. Oh, time's up. See you next time. But before I forget, this podcast is covered by the Creative Commons license. See ya.